I am interviewing Mr. Edward Woods for the Youngstown State University History Department. Mr. Woods lives on 285 East Clark Street, and I'm interviewing him on April 20th, 1979. And I am Stephen Cossey interviewing Mr. Woods. But first of all, Mr. Woods, let's start from right at the beginning. What do you remember, or let's say, where were you born, and what do you remember about your parents and family coming to the East Palestine area?
Well, I was born in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, in the year 1891. My father was a coal miner. We had a family of 10. I had five sisters and four brothers. I'm the oldest living one, now going on 88 in June. And the baby of the family, my brother Thomas, is 70-some. He's the baby of the family. And that is practically, my father was a coal miner, and that's the reason we moved up here. When we moved to East Palestine, I and my brother Disease was World War I veteran too. That's my brother James. And he passed away at the age of 76. And we rode the moving wagon from Beaver Falls into East Palestine. This street over here, what we call Taggart Street, Alice Street, we forget about them. The odd houses there. There was no streets. We come in Main Street. In other words, we come from Darlington up Red Hill and then Main Street and down Main Street up to James Street and lived up on this street on James Street in a double house. And our streets then was all mud and dirt. And when we moved in here, it was a rainy Saturday and the mud was up the horse's belly. And you can see that too. Look, see what it looks like. And from that time on, we go along here on the front street. It has been a great improvement. Now down where the 5 and 10 is, that is now Newbury's, now there was a restaurant there run by a man by the name of Tommy Swagger. And he had a peanut rooster sitting on the front steps, and it was down in, off the street. That was on the opposite side of the street from that. And then we come right up into this intersection right up in here. Now over in here, well, first I'll take this street over here, these two streets here where we come in. That's Alice Street and Taggart Street. Forget about them for this time, because at that time, where Nash is now, that was a ball ground called the Buckeye Ball Diamond. They hit from that corner and then there's a railroad switch come down from a Prospect Mine, which is up in Jimtown. And right at the corner of this factory here of Nash's, it met the railroad. That was the switch that come down. Then we come over into this section here. Now, there was nothing. These houses right here, these roads right here, three or four, was built in the 15s, in the teens, see, when after McGraw's got started. Well, over, you can look out here on these two streets up. There's only two houses on the next street on the corner. There was very few on this house. They went up the hill. Then what you call North Avenue there, they had four houses way out the end, four or five houses, and scattered houses all around. Well, this street we moved in up to James Street, we moved up to the end of that, see? It was. And over here there was a ball diamond. I used to play a ball over there when I first came to town. Then we come over, we go over the other end of town, that is the west end, see, southwest end. Well, that there, southwest end, was a little better built up than this end was, but still that built up after the potteries came in. Well, on the west end of town, they had two potteries. One, the East Palestine Pottery Company, and the other, well, first the other was built after we had a pottery down here where the Novelty Kale is now, and it was called the High China. It was run by the Sebrings, and they went and started the Sebring Pottery, since George Sebring. Well, then he built the number one pottery over here, W.S. George. That left a two right at that end and up there. And the old pottery burnt down in 1912, the old East Palestine. Then W.S. George took over and built it up again around the hills that was there. So they called him number one and number four. Then he had two other potteries, one in Kentanning and one in Canterbury. Well, they've lost them all. Man, the Pittsburgh chair wasn't out there. It was built, and now it's gone again. I guess they got some kind of a pottery out there now. And the Hyatt China went to the novelty. And over here, McGraw's Tire and Rubber. It started in long 1908 and 1909, and closed down in 1923. At one time, there were 2,200 men employed there.
What was the reason the McGraw Tire Company shut down?
Well, I would say this. Just like these boys lost the pottery. Mr. McGraw come here, he owned the Roosevelt Hotel in Pittsburgh, and he put the money in and built up the rubber works. He died, and they got a tire. They called out, it's called the Keystone Tire. Well, they went into New York City, and they spent all kind of money, advertisements, showing everybody a good time, his son and son-in-law, see. Well, the first thing you know, they went under. And probably the same thing with W.S. George Pottery. This man gave all his boys a pottery, one in Kentanning, one in Canterbury, and two, one each for one of them here. And they all lost them. But you can tell the reason why. Now, I wouldn't want to say this. I don't want to say this on there because what the reason, but after you shut that off, I'll tell you the reason why. But their sons lost them, and I don't know why. Now, here, we got this pottery. It was built. This here Adamson's down here was built since I came here. And it, I would say, how that come to be started. C.F. Adamson started that. He was the superintendent at McGraw's when he started. And he developed a vulcanizer to vulcanize tires. And McGraw tried to say that he'd done that on their time, but anyway, he went out and he started this factory down there since they put addition to it. But I guess they're in bad shape too now.
Adamson, yeah.
Well, he sold out to Gilkey. And it just seems now we got a strike going on now over here at Nash's. I don't expect that one because they're an aluminum company in America. I imagine they'll settle some way. But I don't know about this down here. It's pretty leery.
Yeah.
And when we first came here, there was no football or basketball. And there was just baseball. They had two teams, the Buckeyes and the Kelly Islands. Well, they started football in 1904 and 1905. We had a heavyweight team and a lightweight team. They both won their second year of football, won the county championship. Their basketball team, it started out in 1905. I did have a picture around here someplace. I don't know where to find it, but I know the every player was on it. They're all dead and passed away now. But they had a fellow by the name of Goody, G-O-D-D-E, from down at Ambridge, and the rest of his hometown boys. They had George Faulkner, and Enos Kelly, Cannell, and Goody was their center. They had Eva Meeks, Bob Chaplin, and George Brimlow. Well, Brimlow and Cannell went up to Sebring to work. They were fathers. And then they got a couple of different players on there. And Clem Bacon won. Clarence Ward was one. They lined up, and then they had been added to them. But for years, for about 4 or 5 years here, they had wonderful basketball teams. That was long before they ever started high school basketball. And coming from Beaver Falls, one of my brother died, Sam. He was about 4 years older than I am. He'd watched Geneva College practice in the years of 1900 and 1904. Geneva College had some good football teams. Well, he wasn't ever a heavy fella, so he took that lightweight team. They started here in the first year. They went over to Lisbon. The Belmonts just beat the life out of them about 57-0. They come back, and he took over. They played another game, and he cut the score down to 20-0. The next year, they turned the tables on.
Let me ask you, how about your childhood in East Palestine? What you did when you were a kid for fun, your entertainment? What kind of work did you work for your mom and dad? Did you have a spare time job? You know, kids today they don't have.
There was a point now coming up with a family of 10. Now we all grew into this as we got to work. Now, I was a dropout in school in 1905. Went to work at the pottery, and that was a fashion in them days. When your brother older than you, see them days they had to carry in the coal and things and do the chores. Would do the chores when he'd go to work, the next boy would take on. And that's the way that worked up, and so dishwashing and everything else with the girls. So that was the way families worked in them days. Nowadays, it's hard to get anybody to do any work.
In other words, you all had to work together to get along with the family and
right.
to get enough money to survive.
That's right. And we were a happy family. We never had any courting. We never had to bum off anybody. We got through it, but we had a wonderful mother and a wonderful dad.
Where was your first home in East Palestine? Where did you live with your family?
Right up the street here is a White House up here at the end of James Street, just before you up the other way, right up the end of James Street.
Uh-huh.
It was a double house at that time. We moved into there, and there wasn't hardly any houses in this end there. Then we moved over on the west end of town, and finally, when I went to war in 1918, we were living on what we called Glenwood Avenue.
Uh-huh. When you were a kid, what are some of the things you did with your friends for fun?
There's a question now. We built our own swimming pools out along the creek.
Uh-huh.
We got along the best we could with baseball. Sometimes we get a little rubber ball, rubber cord, any kind of a ball we get. We made our own baseball. In fact, we made our own entertainment. We'd go out onto the streets at night. We'd play Run, Sheep, Run. Did you ever hear tell of that?
Mm-hmm.
And then different games we had there, I Spy and different things. We practically made our own entertainment. Nowadays, they don't think of that. I think that's... Now, I don't say the world's spoiled because I always have went to this. Human nature's been the same all the way down through the ages. Well, we made our entertainment. And we come along to that place. We tried to get too good to our kids. We made the entertainment for them. I think that's one of the mistakes we made.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Were there any special places that you went to have fun, or did you stay around home for your entertainment?
Well, mostly around. No, we'd go down to Negley. Of course, we didn't have to dam it down there. We'd go down to what they call the oil tanks. There used to be a bunch of oil tanks down there. They're away from there now. But before you got up over there, put the oil tanks up there. There was this Beaver Creek down there. There's a pretty deep hole down there. We'd go down there to swim. We'd walk up this way and got up to what we call Mud Creek. We had one. And in the sugar camp up here, we made a dam there and swam in the sugar camp up there. We didn't have no bathing suits. Anyway, I was talking to a lady the other day, and, you know, we up there, we'd had a rope come down off a tree. Now, whether somebody put another one up after that, we come out and drop off the rope and drop down in the water.
Well, this lady tells that rope's still there. I don't know.
You know, today, if you go up to Sugar Camp, there's all new houses up there.
Yeah. That's right.
You mentioned that you, because of the family needing money, that you had to drop out of school, and
that's
like
right.
a lot of people at that time.
That's
but
right.
But when you did go to school
in East Palestine,
where did you go, and what was school like in those days?
Well, now we're coming to that. Wood Street. We had one school over here where Captain Taggart is now. There used to be a school there called Wood Street. Well, I seen that grow, and just before the year or two before I left school, they overgrown the school, and they, down along Main Street, going west, there's a bunch of buildings down there where Neil's barbershop is now. You know where that is?
Uh-huh.
Well, they rented rooms up there for the overflow. They called it Captain Ryan School. And that's where they had their school. And then from there, they come up and, let's see, they built now what you, I think that was first, what you call the middle school, and they built the Captain Taggart. I don't know which was first, but them was the two first. Then they come down here and built this one,
East North Avenue.
And then later they built the high school.
Right, right. What do you remember about school, though? The teachers and the subjects?
Well, there's a lot of studies now that they have that we didn't have then, and sometimes I think maybe they get a little too much on a child. They give them too much to study. Now, we were pretty straight on arithmetic with fractions and stuff like that, and of course I dropped out in sixth grade. Well, we was in fractions and stuff then, and one thing we had then, and I have noticed that when I was working the park to get wear boys over there, they didn't have that. They didn't have that metal arithmetic. You need that metal trick. You didn't write it, you had to get it down metal.
Right. Repetition.
Repetition, yeah. You know, in other words, like I'd ask you a question, they'd give you a question, is here, which two men working on a tub of water. Takes one man to take the bucket, to, he'd have to work 3 minutes to fill that tub. The other man would take 2 minutes. Well, these kids will get down with a pencil and they'll scratch it around. Well, there's only so many seconds in a minute.
Yeah.
You figure that down. Well, you come to figure that out, the two of them together would fill that tub in a minute and 12 seconds. But they'll say, you come in there, oh, 2.5 or 2. Well, that ain't the answer. Well, you had to have that metal. We had more metal arithmetic than then.
Right, right.
And you had a lot of metal. Now, you run into a lot of that now. If you take a civil service exam, which I never did, but I had a brother-in-law that carried mail and did. And some of these simple questions, they shoot to you.
Yeah. Was the teacher strict in those days?
Yes, they were. Now, you take... teachers had you under control. I will say that the best teacher I ever had was a woman teacher, and I had her in the sixth grade. She was strict. Since she wasn't, of course, I tried to behave. She never used it on me, but she was pretty strict. She used the hose of the rattan on you. You know what a rattan is?
I believe so. Yeah.
Well, she used that on you. And I would say here, today, now I got a son-in-law. My son-in-law is athletic director up at Richtown. He's been a football coach. He's been a teacher all his life. Well, here, there, they can't touch a kid. And they had him. He was there one day, and two kids got a kid that was kind of a little retarded, and they had him down there and bumped his head on the floor. So he just picked him up this way and took him into this, to the principal's office. Well, this one kid went home and told his mother he hurt him. Well, he didn't. He just hit him. And another kid started after him. He says, you stay back or I will knock you. But the other kid didn't come back. Well, he didn't. Just took him into the principal's office. Well, they sued him. They had about 2 years settling that. And when they took it there, they told him not to worry. The insurance company would take care of him. They had their lawyers to back him, so... They said the lawyer, this guy didn't know what he was doing. He was just a
punk lawyer anyway, they said. Well, anyway, he did have to go to court and tell his story. Well, they didn't do anything with him. But here, this woman tried to sue him, said he'd hurt that kid and everything else. Well, he didn't. Hmm. But you run into them things. Now, I see where certain cases you can chastise a kid now in some places.
Well, if you go, you usually bring him to the principal now, and the principal takes care of it. Yeah. You're better off not to touch a kid today because it seems like many parents are ready to sue him.
That's right. Well, see, they tried to sue him, but they didn't get away with it. But other thing now, when he first went up to Lookstown, he came up from Indian Hills in Cincinnati, was down there. When he came up here as head coach to Lookstown. Well, they had a boy on the football team. And, you know, he's one of them, a big boy. He weighed about 200 pounds, and Bud'd weigh about 190, short, but boy, he's got arms about that big around, strong. So this kid had been running on the school all at once, so he come running at Bud. Bud just took him out and shoved him down the ground. He says, "You're canned. Get off the field and don't come back." And they got to hold, and the school then threw him out. He was demoted. They didn't want no more to do with him. So that kid was out, so he come to Bud, but he lost his daughter, see, about 11 years old, Bud did. This kid had been on the football team. So he used the football boys wanted to be the pallbearers. So he come to Bud and asked if he could be a pallbearer too. He said, "I'm sorry what I've done." He said, "I've been sorry for a long time." Bud says, "Yes, you can." Well, he was down here, very nice boy, very, very up in downtown here. And he went over to Vietnam, and he got killed over there. Well, Bud hated that because he always felt that it's his fault that that kid was thrown out of school. Well, he didn't mean it. He just showed that kid he wasn't on the football team, but this kid had started a bunch of trouble in the school. They threw him out. Well, I guess he'd come to Bud before that because he had a job about $1.50 a day. He come to Bud and apologized to Bud.
How about if I ask you a little bit about your family? When did you get married? And
when did I get married?
Right.
I got married in 1923.
So at that time, the war was already over. You mentioned before, did you happen to serve in World War I?
Yeah, I did.
Let me ask you, before you tell me about serving, what was life? Was life a little different in East Palestine before the war, or when the war was going on?
Well, I will say life was a whole lot different, and I noticed a big change. When I went to war, well, if you've seen a woman smoke a cigarette, that was terrible. And from the time I went over there, they were shipping cigarettes over there. They were raising money for the sending of the boys over there, and the girls got to smoking cigarettes. And cigarettes company made the money on that. And I could see the difference in the morale of our country when I come back here to what it was when before we went over.
How about, did you notice the change in East Palestine too?
Yes. Uh-huh. The change in the people here, because I seen girls smoking, drink wine, that I was surprised. And I fought with the 26th Yankee Division in the George F. McMahon Post here that was named after. He was in the same division but a different regiment than mine. And the fellow was at Redan, his regiment relieved mine 2 days before he got killed.
Oh. So you were right there on the front,
yeah,
in the fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in Europe when the war ended?
Yes.
You were.
I was. Well, there's another thing. I've always said the worst sufferer of war is the mothers. Broken-hearted mothers. When you left your mother here, you know she was broken-hearted. Well, they had that flu in during the war here, and many lives lost. Well, I lost my mother.
Maybe this might sound funny to you, but I'd just come out of the San Miguel Drive, and we'd been raiding up around San Miguel there. And we come down to a military academy outside of Verdun there to clean up a little bit before we went up in the Argonne, where we went in three different battles up there. Well, while we was in there, she died along about that time, 10th of October around in there. And I was awake, I had been reading, there was other fellows there, we was in the second story of this academy, and I heard my mother call me. I know I wasn't sleeping, I heard her call me. Well, that preyed on me all the time I went through these other three battles. And on the 11th day of November, the army would quit fighting. That night, the mail come up, and I was handed a letter edged in black. So, and from the time we went to the only bath we got from St. Mary's Mail Drive until it was signed was when we was in that academy. So that would be from, we went into St. Mary's on the 12th of September. We come out of there and went down to the Argonne about 7th to 10th about in there we stayed to clean up in this academy. And the same clothes you put back on and things, it was all lousy cooties and everything, you might have heard them having the cooties. Well then, we never got another bath to Lamberson's day because you couldn't, it was too cold, you couldn't wet bath in the creek.
Did you mingle with the enemy after the war?
Well, I didn't. I don't know if anybody did because he seemed signed, of course, they waved at one another, of course, but they got ordered not to mingle. Our outfit didn't. Of course, we didn't have very many men while on our company when it ended. We were only about 35 because they sent us a replacement up because when we pulled out of this pit, we went on some end of the other front and was waiting on a replacement coming up. They didn't get in. They sent a bunch up from Arkansas, see. And we had only had 35 men when the armistice was signed on our company. And they come up, of course they left them out for a few days to leave, not putting them in as lousy and everything. And they call me as part of it. They was, one fellow was with this Arkansas bunch, his home was in New York City. And they had camp up there, camped up in Camp Mills, but they sent him down to Arkansas to a camp in the draft. And he was moaning there one day about why he never got home, why he never got home, and why couldn't they send him to a camp up in Camp Mills so he could get home once in a while. And this top sergeant, he called me, because guy you ever seen Irish blood. He says, I'll tell you, sonny. He says, why didn't you write a letter to the president? He says, he might let you put your pup tent back at the piano.
Well, coming home for you wasn't such a great thing like it was for the other boys because you lost your mom, huh?
No, that's true. And I lost my mom and I lost my brother-in-law.
Oh.
He died too. And then my dad then had quit mining coal and he was working on the rubber works then. And I come in, got off a train. I sent word, I didn't know just when I'd land in. But my sister lost her husband and her brother-in-law was up at their house that night, and he'd come down to meet me at the train. Well, I just took off the back end of the train. I didn't want to come down through the crowd, just beat up the back way to home. And when I got home, well, of course, my dad was at work at rubber. He was on night turn. When he come home in the morning, he waited till I got up out of bed. And boy, oh boy, when I left home, his head was just as black as could be. See, he died at the age of 66. And his hair was just as white as could be.
Hmm. after you got home, where did you go to work? Did you go back to the pottery?
No, I was working in the rubberworks when I went. See, the war broke out in 1914. I was working there. We went over in 1918 and fought, see, when we done our fighting.
There was a big demand for rubber products when the war started.
Yeah. So I worked in the rubberworks. I went there working at the rubberworks. And when I was working at the rubberworks, in the meantime, before that, I'd worked here and I went to Canton to help to start the Gordon Rubber Works there. And then Kaiser, the man that got us out there, he left and they come back, and I come back and worked at the National Rubber out here. They had two rubber works here, see, the National Rubber. And then they had one down where the Kenmore is. That was a rubber works. And I worked at the National, and pretty soon I went over long after I come out of the war. And then I went to the war. When I come out from the war, before I got started to work, I had a job back here at McGraw's, or National either one. But before I had started back to work, it was over there to Idor Park to dance. Well, there was a fellow by the name of Leo Dolan was working up at the same rubber works in the office. He was later a reporter from one of the papers in Warren, see, Vince Dolan. So he come in to pound and help me. He's up at the Canton Rubber there and hunt me. And they told him where I was, so he'd come over there to the park and asked me, Lloyd Fullerton, I was over there. And he said, Johnny Kleppner wants to see you up at Canton. Can you come up? Well, see, they had... we went out there, there's three of us went up to start them. They was a big druggist on there, we started making tires, Kaiser, John Todd, and I. So they wanted me to come up. He wanted to talk to me, so I went up. And he told me they was having trouble with their overflow on their tires. And here they were working a kid there on piecework. And I guess he got mad and quit. And he come up and wanted to know, got me to figure out what was their trouble. Well, it was getting too much rubber on it. They wasn't giving them enough stretch, see. And it was getting too big of overflow. So I went up and straightened them up. And then they put me on for assistant superintendent at night. And it just before the railroad strike that they was figuring on in 1920. And they went out. They had a wonderful cord tire. And they went out and they went all around and bought all the rubber and cord tire they could. Well, the railroad didn't strike. Rubber dropped, cord fabric dropped, and they dropped. Mm-hmm. They all these places filled with Canton. So we left there. I went then, and then just right in the spring of the year, I went then up to Hartville and took a fellow up with me, Ronnie Fullerton. And we worked up there that summer all night turning. We'd come down to Canton over Saturday or Sunday, or maybe come home. But we took a job in a small town then. You know where Hartville is?
No, I don't. Hartville?
Hartville.
No.
Outside of Canton. That's where the Amish is, where the celery swamps is.
Uh-huh.
Well, we worked up there that summer. Then I come back and started at McGraw's. And I worked there till 1923. February 1923, it just went flat. Then I went up there and started in the pottery up at Sebring. And then when I was in Sebring, I got married that June.
Uh-huh.
I had two daughters. One of them's still living, the other passed away. I don't know whether I gotta put your hand in your ear.
So you got married in 1923, and then you worked. Then you moved to East Palestine a short while after you got married?
No, I was in East Palestine when I got married.
Okay, your wife was from Sebring.
No, my wife was from town here, but went to Sebring after.
Okay,
Sebring.
So you got married here in East Palestine, then you went to Sebring,
You
came back again.
Yeah.
And you worked? Did you work for the McGraw Tire Company again?
No, I come back to the pottery. See, the McGraw's was done then. See,
that's
the McGraw's
right.
Went down.
So you were at the pottery.
So I went back to pottery. See, I went back to the pottery in 1923. That was the year I was married.
The potteries in town were quite busy. There was always a lot of work.
Yeah, they were good for a while. And then all at once, and very good during World War II. And I don't know what happened to them.
During the 1920s, what was it like in East Palestine? Prohibition? Were there a lot of speakeasies in town here?
I'll give you a little history on that. I come here. There were speakeasies down in the country place. It was some. Now, East Palestine, from the time I come here, the Arnold Brewing Company, it was over on Walnut Street. And then it turned into a livery stable. Now there's nothing there. It's tore away. This right where they pulled the house down for the log house to move, this down this way from it. That was a brewery there. And it just went out of existence the year I come in here because Palestine went dry. And Palestine had been dry every year I lived here up until 1933 when the country went wet again.
Yeah.
Now, at one time, the county went dry. And the whole county went dry, but Washingtonville didn't. And Waterford was always wet. It always was one coming from Waterford to Latona. But when the county went dry, everybody went from Palestine, Waterford, and all the way up to Washingtonville when the streetcars were on them. And they go up there and they come down on the streetcar and catch that 8 o'clock train back. They'd come up there, and then the same way before that, when Palestine was dry and Waterford was wet, they'd go up to see the drunks getting off the train. That used to be a big amusement, to watch the drunks getting off the train.
Let's go to the late 1920s and then early 30s, and we get into the Depression here in East Palestine.
Yes, that's right.
What was life like during the Depression here?
Well, it was pretty rough because here I used to work. You know where Simmons' farm is?
Yes.
Well, just before you get to Simmons' farm, there's a place that Arnie Yaring had a farm there. And I used to walk. I lived on Martin Street then. I used to walk from Martin Street out there. Work 10 hours a day, get my dinner for 30 cents an hour. And Ann was out of work, and then they took the oil tanks down at Negley out. Well, they took them out. I went down there, when they took that oil out of them tanks, there's a bunch of big tanks there. They would steam them overnight, and that oil would be hot, and it'd just run. And it would get in there in the morning, and it would be hard enough to burn you, but hot enough, it was hot. You get in there and you had a paddle, you'd shoot that up to the place where they run it out. The oil out and let it run out all the way. And then they took all the pipelines they had out there that they run to get the oil out and things. Well, I suppose it was in the fall of the year then, kind of chilly, but when you get in there, getting that hot oil, it didn't bother it. Didn't bother you at all in the hot oil. And I worked there about a month or 6 weeks getting that done.
What type of wages did you get for doing things like that?
Well, down there I got 60 cents an hour.
60 cents an hour.
And that was good at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, in the pottery, see, I was a warehouseman. And different trades, see, my trade, you had to work 3 years to get the trade, but it was a trade. Well, while I worked at it, I suppose I'd pay a couple of dollars now, maybe. But when I quit the pottery in 1957, I was getting $1.86 a quarter. So,
did a lot of businesses go out, lose out in the Depression? Did a lot of them close down in East Palestine? Do you remember?
Well, some of them went down after. But, I don't blame it at all on the Depression. I blame that on conglomeration. In other words, you've got supermarkets and you got people, even your milk now. You used to get your milk off your farmer. Now you go around and they take this. Well, you're paying for all those truck drivers, you're paying for all that different. And you've come to this place now. Our merchants was good here to us. And of course, I never had no trouble that way because the merchants, I had no good merchants. They stayed with me. Well, I always catch, when I got back to work, I catch them up. And of course, we had a bonus come. We took half of a bonus to help to live through the depression, which was, my bonus was $1,000. Well, I had to use $500 to keep my head above water. And the other $500 didn't mean that much to me when I got it. But I would say here, store after store started, well, take Mrs. Lybert up here, the building up here. She lives up there yet. We used to have a store up there. She went under. There used to be a store out in East Clark. There used to one up in Lawtown. There used to be one up here, little stores. And then there are three or four stores down there, grocery stores. Well, the only one that ever survived was Rookenbrod's. And they're about the only independent store I know of in town now.
Well, what? How were they able to stay and, you know, keep going?
Well, I'll tell you why they keep. Their prices are pretty well, ain't much difference in the prices. And they run credit. A lot of their old customers pay every month. They go that way with them. And they deliver where the chain stores don't.
Right, yeah. A lot of older people who can't get to the store,
they take advantage
of that.
Yeah, and they call it and they take it. So that's the only store, grocery store in town. Now, at one time we had two clothing stores here. Well, one just, Bob Johnson had business and he was getting up and tired. He could see it coming on. And he sold his store out because he'd had places to take care of it. His wife's people had left him money that they had to take care of out in Arizona. Well, then he closed his clothing store, and then Chickie Atkinson, he run in there along where the building and loan was. Well, they took the building off him. They need that place for a building, so he had to give the place up. So they wanted too much money across the street, so he got out of the clothing business. And we didn't have no clothing store to listen come in just lately here. That's only been in here about 2 years, that clothing store. There was no clothing store at all. Now, we don't have a shoe store in town. We had a woman, had one there, but they raised the rent on her, and she gave it up, and her husband's a preacher, and they living down around here, Shockton. And they got their shoes, she'd been selling them off up there at that dry clean store up south end of town.
Right. You know, when you, did your family, did you have to make any adjustments with your family during the Depression? Did you have to change your lifestyle? You know, like cut out entertainment and going out. Did you have, were your daughters born in the 1930s or?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so you had a family at that time.
I had a family, yes. We had our family to take care of. And once in a while, we used to go out and play 500 with another couple of, a bunch of groups are there. And I had an uncle that he's dead, and he'd come down there and stay with the girls over and go out this night. He'd like to do it. And maybe once a month we'd go out to play cards or something like that. The rest of the time we spent with the girls. But at the same time, when the girls commenced to get up in high school, we went through this, see. The World War II was on. The boys were practically all in war. And we practically, oh, a bunch of girls. We'd have 8 or 10 girls there at a time. And maybe 3 or 4 of them staying all night. We lived in a double house, and we had an attic cabin before this. See, we bought this place in 48. Bought it off my father-in-law. Well, the girls, this sign of May, Noel, that's Dick Noel's, the head of the district agent, as mother. She stayed with us practically all one winter, and the girls had a bunch of girls there, and they'd come there and spend time there, and we enjoyed that, them going along during the Depression and during the war. Well, that was during the war, after the Depression was over, see. But they did have that ration of gas, and this here, Mrs. McCarthy, I showed you, she had arthritis, and she was doctoring with Dr. Beaver in Latona. Well, Ina Mae had a car, and we'd get, on account of her going over there, we'd get these tickets for gasoline for her so she could help take her over and things. So it worked out just fine that way.
How about, was there any crime that you remember in East Palestine, or was there basically nothing? You know, you had law enforcement during the 20s and 30s.
Well,
was there ever any problems with anything?
Well, we've had some trouble. We'll see, before I come in town, well, I met the man in order to use at East Smith. He was supposed to have a well in there, and hadn't had time to shoot somebody here. And he followed him and caught him. I don't know the whole story, but he chased after him and got him East Smith. And then we had another murderer who brought the same thing. And then, we had a rash of flowers. We had a fruit man here who had a fruit store here and went to California by the name of, Cassio, you might have heard. Anyway, he had a, right where I told you that, where the 5 and 10 is now, where the fella used to have it, he had his fruit store there, and then finally went up the street further on the other side of the street after Tom Smith developed. And, he had a barn, and he went up there just across from the Presbyterian Church, into the house in the corner. They had a barn there. Well, it burned down. Then he went down and got a barn down South Street. It burned down. And they figured somebody was setting on fire. Well, he had a brother-in-law supposed to be in there, and shortly after that, some people had an idea, maybe it was him, we don't know. But he left Spezio, left town, Cassio and Spezio. And Spezio left town, and Cassio built quite a business here in the fruit business when he, after going on the side of the street, and then he went to California. And I can't say that we had too much crime. You were generally pretty safe until I can remember here. Well, when I bought this place, the place I live out there, I never used a key out on West Martin Street. And for a long time, I didn't use a key. Now I go out and lock it in the daytime. But we never locked our doors. Didn't have to. But you occasionally have somebody do something, but nothing major. Now, we did have, they got tipped off. They killed the one of my guests down there. They had a bunch come in to rob the Eagles over here one time. And they were laying there, the cops and things were laying there waiting for them when they come in. I don't know whether it's necessary or not, but anyway, they killed one of them. They catch them at the Eagles. So we haven't had too many big crimes, but we have more vandalism now than we ever had. An awful lot of vandalism, like running over to school with the lawn. I guess they catch the boy, whoever it was. I don't know what they did with him. But I don't know how they're going to stop that. They've let it get away with them. And I don't know. Now, we had a question here. Now that they come along here, that they come around you here, they got drugs up at the school. I don't know whether they have or not. But I do know this. I know that things that they do that I wouldn't do, and I don't know of very many boys would do in my day.
Yeah. Well, kids, years ago, if kids did something wrong, I guess the worst thing they did was smoking cigarettes or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, and when we went to school, Now we go home borrowing a teacher or somebody else. And I think it was with most families. Whether we was on our own, we had to take care of ourselves. We wanted to take care of our troubles home. And that's what the kids do now, take their troubles home. Well, we had that. Don't drink, take your troubles home. I'd say different things come up, but petty little things, but nothing real serious. Now, you take, I don't know, if you did have a bad boy or something in town there, they were never too rough, and I don't think I ever seen anybody take advantage of old people like they're doing today. An old woman, an old man, if they think he's got a dollar, they'll take it off him.
How about if we move up to the late 1930s and 40s, you were working in the pottery then, and the war broke out. What was it like in East Palestine just before everybody started going off to war? And during the war, was life different in town here?
Well, I would say life was pretty good. We'd just come on, just getting out of the Depression, and the war went up. Come on, that made everybody was working overtime during the war. And they were getting along good. See, when the World War II would come on, see that they had WPA and PW and all them letters to give people something to do. Well, anyway, when the war broke out, everybody was working. You worked overtime. You know, you had that time and a half for overtime. And you got a lot of overtime in there, and that's where we got an advantage while the war was going on.
Did the pottery make anything for the government in regards to the war for the men?
Well, I don't think individually I probably did. I think Newcastle did, and probably Mary Channel, Niagara Falls, where they made the heavier wear like hotel. They may have. But I would say here, when everybody was at war and everybody was working, they was buying.
They had the money.
They had the money, they was buying. And that is the trouble now. Things is going up, it's going to have to stop. Everybody's buying. They're buying. Well, we're going to have to go into a recession. Well, we'll never
inflation's going to run away, right?
That's right. And I don't know, the sooner recession comes, the better it is for us. And I pray to God that we do have a recession to stop this, because this keeps going on. I know what the word is coming from. That all your money is just a bunch of paper. What do you got back of? You got your resources. And to get your resources, you got to use a lot of paper money to get it.
Did you have any friends or relatives that went off to war?
In
World War II?
World War II, I don't think I had any relatives in World War II, outside of both my son-in-laws were in World War II, but they got married after the war. Well, Bud just came back and married Donna's. He just got back at some daughter, father, just a girl. He just got back and was down at Walter Reed Hospital. He was in the hospital there, you know. He had a bad knee from football, and he was on a stretcher bearer, see, and he slipped off a bridge there, and he hurt his leg again. So they sent him back to Walter Reed Hospital, and he's kind of an intern down there when he got married. So he was in, and Red McCarthy, see, he was in the war. He was in the South Pacific. He had, he was in there practically the whole distance of war, I think he was, before he got back.
Did the town, other than everybody working and making things, some products for the armies and so on, did the town do anything to try to show its support for the men fighting? Did they have rallies or anything like that?
Well, they would back them as much as that there. They tried to back them. The Legion backed them. The question is, here you see, we formed the American Legion over Paris over World War I. Now, I don't know whether you ever heard of tell the GI Bill. Well, we got that from, fought for to get that from. And then we take you on there, now you see what we did with rallies and stuff. Well, the main thing in World War II we didn't have in World War I was government bonds. We gained by it. We were working good and we were buying them bonds. And that gave me the down payment on my house in 1948, you see. Because I'd worked good and I'd built them bonds up. I had parents to make my down payment and get my house. Mm-hmm. And in 10 years' time, I owned it. And that is the thing you got to figure now that I didn't notice there's much difference in the morale of the people when these boys come back as I did the World War I, because in World War I, when we come back, well, seldom you seen, even we went over there, we seldom seen a man smoking cigarettes. It wasn't cigarettes. Well, then they'd send this Bull Durham over there, make your own, and they got that, and they got the YMCA's. Even the church had bought money, sent cigarettes over there. These cigarette companies was made through World War I. Then World War II, they'd done the same thing. They sent cigarettes and everything to them. And I know our Legion Post would send them out with a bunch of cigarettes over there to them. And, of course, World War I, they get more cigarettes than we did. They got better break that way. They got more money, and now the soldier gets a lot more money. But we was over there, and our hero was a bad thing about World War I. And I'm never crazy about the Red Cross. Now, they do a lot of good work, you understand that. But they pay a lot of big money, and a lot of people got their hands in there. Now, we were over at World War I over there. They would send chocolate, tobacco in there. Of course, now, we had to pay for it. They didn't give it to us. The Red Cross. Salvation Army, no. Salvation Army, we come out of one front there, and the 26th Division, there was right back in, it was coming out. It was right there with their kettles and donuts and coffee, giving it to us when we come out of the front. You never seen no Red Cross people at the front.
I've heard about the Red Cross like that before. I had a my wife's two uncles said that they remember having to pay for the cigarettes.
Yeah.
During the war, and that they never really trusted the Red Cross.
Well, here now people in town here they spent money from that. Now probably when you take. See, I never got the cigarette habit, but I only smoked a pipe. And they'd send tobacco over. I always sold Prince Albert or something along that line. At that time, they were selling at about 14 cents a can back home. Well, we'd get it for 9 cents over there from the Red Cross. But here, the people was giving them money, donating money to buy this kind of stuff. The cigarettes were the same way. They had to buy the cigarettes. I'll say a cigarette is by paying, say you're paying a quarter for a pack of cigarettes in this country. They was charging them 18 cents over there to buy them. So they were saving a little bit, but they got the figure here. Them fellas over there was only making a dime, 10 cents a day. Then on top of that, they'd take out their government bond, they'd take out their insurance, and of course, when I was over there, see, just before I went over, I had a sister, and she had a family of eight, and her man was killed in a mine disaster. And we worked to get her the Pennsylvania compensation. And I was going to enlist, but I waited and went in my draft on that account. And we finally got her compensation in, so I went over to the Army, and I talked to them there, and I told them I had this sister with hard luck. Well, they said, why don't you give half of yours to your mother and half to the father. And then they were Christians. I suppose I bought on the highest paid privates over there, but the question is here. I assigned $15 to my mother and $15 to my father to take care of my sister. And that left me $6 a month. That's what I had to go on after they took the bonds and insurance out. That's all I had left. Because they see they allowed me $15, allowed it all, so that was $45. But you can figure out how a dime mom said I'd have out of 15 after.
Yeah. How about the politics in East Palestine? The politicians, what do you remember? Are there any outstanding men that you can think about? Or have the politics always sort of run smoothly in East Palestine? No problems, no scandals or anything like that?
Well, you hear some people complain about this. One big thing is you hear it, a lot of people figure that they should never give this light plant up. And they did different things. And, of course, people being blamed for things. Now, really outstanding, they done different things. Walt Huntsman was in there, Mary. Of course, I was on the perch park from everyone that first started. Well, he got the swimming pool and things in here. That's named after him now. And he had been a county commissioner, I suppose it was on. But time in and time in, of course, he never had no city office, but he was a prosecuting attorney, and a very highly thought of in town was Bocknett. And we had a mayor here. Some liked him, some didn't. Derek Lyons, every time he'd run for mayor, he'd join the Methodist Church and he'd get it. Then he'd turn about. But you had that going and they never seen anything like it. Now I will say here, I think we had a very good mayor in Charlie Labor. I think he was square. He was a lurking man. He was square. And I think we had two good police officers at one time, and John Faulkner, and of course I don't kick at any of the police. They all knew their duty. It was fair, and Ralph Charlton was very square during the early days of our life. A good square policeman. They worked for the people and took care of them. Of course, they didn't have as many people to take care of. You got to realize when I come to Palestine, there's about 2,000 people here. And when this rubber works was booming, they employed 2,200. These houses across the street here on Alice Street, they built up there, and they were on Tiger Street. Jack Mahan, he had now you asked about bootlegging. Well, he had two of those houses, and he hooked together one place from the other. And they would go in there, see, they run three shifts. And one bunch would get out of bed, and another bunch would get in. And he had the two houses together. Well, he bootlegged. And he made a fortune bootlegging. And he went up here after that, and he started a service station, and he left town. I don't know where he went, but I understand now that somewhere around there that I heard this lately, I don't know, but there's somebody related to him through what he made and thing. It helps Nick's Vic Snodgrass out.
Uh-huh.
I've heard tell lots of this rumor. I don't want you to repeat that.
Did the police ever make any arrests for these bootleggers, or did they just sort of turn their backs?
Well, that's something was pretty quiet on Jack Mahan. I never heard tell of being arrested. Don't know in here, but I do say here now, here we started, here they started, and we had a dentist
When they had Mayor Farron here, he started that. Well, he'd go out and he'd have this Doc Conrad go out different places and pick up fellas and fetch them in, and he'd find them. And he was making money on him and Conrad. So this Doc Conrad was over at Youngstown. I never did find out who killed him. But anyway, he was stabbed to death over there. In Youngstown. See, they were going over to Youngstown all over, picking up and fetching them here and finding them.
About the transportation in town, what do you remember about the early transportation when you were a boy coming here, and what changes have you seen in the type of transportation people have used?
Well, I would say here, you know, your automobile, you don't own an automobile, you're out of luck. Now, when I first come here, you had trains, and when we grew up from here, we had plenty of trains. This little town here, they claimed they'd done more business than any, when Gros Over Creek was done, and any town between here and Chicago, twice its size. And we'd have about four trains stopped each way coming. Now we don't have a train. We don't even have a bus to Youngstown now on a Tuesday, and then you only got so many hours, you got to come back.
You used to have a bus that went every day to Youngstown?
Yeah. Our transportation here, that's where it hit. It's the older people hard. Now you take my wife and I want to go to the mall or Youngstown, either one, we got to find any way to go. Now they did have here for a while, just a two-car truck went up to Mansfield and back. Used to put the railroads on, and every Saturday, we'd run up to Canton to see my niece, which is living out in California now. Well, now we don't know, have no way out of town unless we get down here on Tuesday morning, 8:49, go up over the mall or downtown Youngstown. And they start back at 12:30. And we have no way to get down to Cincinnati. Now we go to, only by going to Youngstown, and there's just one a day down to Cincinnati. And even if we wanted to go up to see my daughter up at Ravenna, we couldn't get to Ravenna. We'd go there and we'd take a Greyhound from Youngstown that goes to Cincinnati and Columbus, get off at Woodstown. And my daughter lived between Woodstown and Hartville. And we could go up there that way. But when we go up there, they generally come down and get us.
Did they ever have a taxi service here in town?
Yes, they did. But them days, when the taxi was running, they had the trains and things. It wasn't so much of it. They had taxi savers. Hazel Spannel and mine used to run the taxi. And so did Jim McIntosh run the taxi. But
what year was that you have taxis in East Palestine, would you say?
Well, I would say from the time I come back from war up until I'd say up until Depression time.
You, when you first got here, there was just a horse and buggy, though, right?
Yes.
When did you see the first car in East Palestine?
First car in East Palestine in the early 1900s. And this little fellow I told you had a little store down there with a, what do you call this? He got one. Max Niebuhr had one. And I think my daddy-in-law had the first Buick was ever in town.
There was a Doc Hartford in town here.
Doc Hartford had one. He had one. And, of course, before the automobile, he had a colored man that used to drive it. And, different things turn up there. You get to thinking about different things, and you take, let's see. Oh, what I was going to say, there's another thing in recreation. I used to get a kick out of it, both girls and boys. On a Sunday,
some people get on what you call the pine haulers. Well, they didn't have the disposal plant down there then. We walked down there, and it was a pretty place. We walked down around there. Then some Sundays we'd walk to Waterford and back. So one Sunday we walked to Latona and come back on this 8:30 train. So we had had different ways of diversion than what they got now. Now we never think of what they think of now, nightclubs and that. We didn't have anything like that. Now the life now is going out in the nightclubs.
I understand you've been pretty active with sports in town over the years.
Yeah, I have.
You've always sort of taken an interest in sports. Did you, beside participating, were you involved in organizing different activities for people in the park and so on?
Yes. That was our first baseball team in 1933. Then from 1933 through 1941.
These were Legion teams, is that correct?
American Legion teams.
And you used to play surrounding towns.
Yeah. And what I'm going to say, now this boy later on, after he got out of Legion ball, played with Beaver Falls in the Ohio Pennsylvania League for a while. This was our last team.
Were you one of the coaches?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I really was the main one after that, see, because we started out with, here, we started out with Jack Meekson then, and we were down to Massillon to play. We shut Massillon out here and went down there to play. We played Massillon. We wanted to pitch this boy. This other boy, he pitched, ain't on there now. Yeah, he wanted to pitch a left-handed pitcher, and they just batted the dickens out of him.
Why, what happened to the Legion team in town? Why isn't it successful anymore? Why did it sort of fizzle out?
Well, I'll give you that now here, you take here. This team here, now this here boy, wait till I show you where it is. This boy here. And this boy. And this boy, but both, see, this was the last year they turned 18. See, they couldn't do nothing with them. This boy and this boy were both given a contract with the Cleveland Indians. This boy, just before that, got in an automobile wreck, and he got his back, so he batted 300 or more in every league he played in, but he couldn't bend over to get a low ball, so they had to give it up. This boy here, now he was signed with the Cleveland Indians, and they had him. Well, and he belonged to them. And somehow or another, they made a deal with Chicago. They signed him on a left-handed pitcher to Chicago. In the meantime, he was pitching in Kansas City in the American Association. We had to lay the one there and they'd see him pitch one time.
What was his name? Do you remember?
Ernie Groth.
Ernie Groth.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he went there, and every league he was in, he was the best pitcher they had. They got out the Pacific Coast League. Well, when he was at Kansas City, one of the New York Yankees owed Kansas City a pitcher. Well, Kansas City made a deal with Chicago. And Chicago wanted to give him Bob Kozaiva, left hand no, but this Bill Siss says I want Ernie Groth. So he went down that spring, he went down to he went to Kansas City and pitched that year. The next year he went down there and this Bill Skiff told him to come down that Casey Stengelman wanted to look at him. Well, they had bonus players on there, and you know, he only allowed 40 men under contract. Well, they couldn't sign him to a contract. But they sent him back to Kansas City. Well, he told him, come home. Kansas City wouldn't give him enough money. So he was up to my house one night there, and they called there, and they told him to call. And he was right at my house here when they called. And
they called him from Oakland, California, and Charlie Dressing them. And they said, we just bought your contract off for Kansas City. They says, what's your trouble with them? So he says, not enough money. Well, he says, what he asked? He said, $1,100 a month. He says, you get right out here right away, catch a plane and come. He said, I can't. He said, they got a wife and daughter want to fetch them with me. He said, well, get there as soon as you can. Well, then I'll show you something here. Well, see, after this, he was pitching to San Francisco one night. Something happened to his shoulder. And he didn't win another game that year. They sent him down to Baltimore and then down south to work on him. He finished up in Oklahoma City because every time he got up north, why, his arm wouldn't work on him anymore. But the Yankees was figuring on him strong at that time. See, San Francisco, it's just cold out there at night. He'd won 7, lost 1. When they talked to him that night, they told him, you'll win 30 games in this league, in the Pacific Coast League, and that's the next branch up seat to AAA. Here he is again. Now, this was a pitcher that Cleveland wanted, too. Now, he had another year before Latona High School. And when he was worked out and they seen him, Cleveland wanted him the next year and was going to send him to Flint, Michigan. Well, Latona High School was in, starting in March and playing baseball. The darn coach pitched team and he hurt his arm. It was so good that Cleveland didn't want him.
Yeah. Well, what were you going to say before about the Legion now? There's no Legion in town, is there? A baseball team anymore?
Well, we got a team in the Hot Stove League.
Right.
We back that now. What I was going to say here, 1933 up until this team in 1941, we won 131 games, lost 6, tied 3. Many of these teams were older than we were. Now, the day that Cleveland picked him up, Oliver wasn't there this day, I don't think. The one I told you that they coached with me. But the day Cleveland pitched him up, we had a man's team over here from Warren. And I told Zewilling in place, it was down there scouting Skelly. And I told him I'd show him both pitchers. Well, this pitcher pitched the first 5 innings. 14 strikeouts, one guy bunted the ball back to him. Benched him. And then Bill Oliver went in. You don't know. Bill Oliver went in. And Oliver finished the game. We shut him out. They picked up Oliver, too, but they couldn't sign him until next year. Next year, after they got through high school, it was done. But in that time, from 1933, now we started that, same time, we just got in our new building. We had people, this ball team went around different places, like Newcastle, Warren, them. We had people coming over there and coming to our fish fries. That's where we made the money to pay for a hall. We done that. We started this, Boy Scouts, and our street fair on the same year, 1933. Now, the teams, this team and the first team, between that and the teams and all between that, we come up with 139 victories, 60 defeats and 3 ties. We played our independent team 8 games, won 4 and lost 4. That's our men's team in town.
So you were mostly interested in baseball,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
Uh-huh. Well. Sort of in conclusion to our talk, Mr. Woods, looking back at East Palestine and the years you've lived here, if there are any changes that you would have liked to have seen taken place in town, what would they have been?
Well, I would say one thing, and I think I've started that, they've started that out, I'm on that Christian Concern, closer cooperation among our churches. Now, we have an organization called Christian Unity. We have the Methodists, the Brethren, the First Presbyterian Church, the Lutheran, and our Lady of Lords. Closer cooperation among our churches. Now, we have a ministerial association, but that ain't the answer. The answer is the congregations coming closer together. See what I mean?
Right. So you felt that in East Palestine there was, there's always been a very, very great distinction as to what religion you belong to, and people more or less sometimes wouldn't associate with other people because they went to a certain church. Was that ever the...
Well, they associated, but you take in our time now here. At one time here, the Ku Klux Klan started around, and it kind of worked in here for a while. And it worked.
What year was that, the Ku Klux Klan?
That had to be in the early 20s, from 22, 23 up to about 25. And there was an ill feeling between the Catholics and the Protestants. And some of the people had an oath out, the KSC oath. What the KSCs do, cut your throat and everything. I suppose it worked both ways. But anyway, we don't have that in town anymore. We have a closer feeling. And it used to be, at one time, you couldn't get they wouldn't take the Catholics in the firemen. That's all gone. That's over the dam.
Right.
And there's a closer feeling all around, and I think it could be better yet. But we have got that. We got the Church Woman United. We got the community, or the Committee on Social, or the Community, what did I say? Christian Unity Committee. And we had them, so I think we're getting closer that way. And now during the war, there was no baseball in town outside. That's when they started these little leagues and the pony leagues and all them, because we didn't have no baseball. They got to play another ball. Then after but I didn't run the team, but I did run a tri-state tournament here from 1946 to 1951. And it was a good thing, but it dropped out. Well, our own team came in and protested, and I had to go along with that. Our own team came in with three boys over age, and the other team came in and protested, so I had to throw them out. And it caused an ill feeling, so we just cut the tournament out. See, these teams were all paying $15 to come in, and we were running that tournament. In the next year, hadn't happened, I was going to put it up to 25, and we kept it going. We could probably put it up to 50, but we wouldn't have had the ground now after they started pony leagues and things. You wouldn't have no ground to do anything like that. So all we can do now is go along. Now we got a team in the hot stove league, and we pay for them.
Right. Well,
but I've never had one of these boys, never had any trouble with them. Now, this boy won games, and I never had no trouble with him. Never cussed him. Went along with him. This boy here, Cuddy Falstein, he's a druggist now over in Youngstown. We went to Louisville. He wasn't a big boy. He wasn't a bad batter. He was small. Good judge of a ball. And in fact, now this guy was a better long ball hitter and probably a faster runner, but I don't think he's as good a gauge as this kid, because this kid, if the ball was hitting, just didn't know where it would go to.
But he only weighed about 130 or 31 pounds, and he was good. So he come in there. We was up at Louisville one day, and he was playing. Well, he didn't want to lead off. We'd lead him off, he was short, he got lots of balls. So I said, all right, we'll play today then. And I started, I was going to start out with this with McLean up hitter. Well, I figured, well, best thing I can do, lead off with McLean up hitter. And he was a good base runner, and he's small, get lots of walks. So I started writing up the line. So he changed his mind and come down, and I give him a talk to him. And I said, well, listen. I said, the reason I'm batting you first, you're small, you get a lot of base on balls. I said, you do good on base and run on bases, you listen to instruction. I said, you'll score more runs than anyone on this team. Now, I said, it's up to you. You want to go along and play ball that way? It's all right with me. If you don't, well, you can hand in your uniform. I said, that's all there is to it. So after that, he was a good boy. But I never balled any of them out.
Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Woods,
well,
for allowing me to interview you, and it was a real pleasure.
Mm-hmm.